Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. This is Hour 2. It is Thursday, December 3rd. You're listening to Truly Local Radio. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. Joining me in the studio this afternoon are Candace Wilkins and Judy Smith-Torrey and Chief of Police for the Coburg Police Service, Chief Kai Liu. Before we get to our conversation, this is one of those moments where we play a song that is related to what we're going to be talking about today. Today's theme, of course, is remembering victims of violence. So before we get into the conversation, here's Alice Cooper.
Got his woman to take his seat. He got the power, oh, she got the need. She spends her life groove pleasing up a man. She feeds him dinner, oh, anything she can. She cries alone at night too often. Smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Man makes your hair gray. He's your life's mistake. All you're really looking for. An even break. He lies right at you. You know you hate this game. Slaps you once in a while and you live in love and pain. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. 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 Thank you. man. She feeds him dinner, oh, anything she can. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women bleed.
Alice Cooper from the Welcome to My Nightmare album, 1975. The song, of course, Only Women Bleed. Well, folks, as I say, in the studio this afternoon are Candace Wilkins, Judy Smith-Torrey, and Chief Kai Liu. This year marks the 26th anniversary of the horrifying slaying of 14 women at L'École Polytechnique in Montreal. Local residents here are invited to gather to remember the victims of that violent act, but also remember the victims of violence and domestic violence in general. Welcome to the studio, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Now, I guess we should ask you first, Judy. Are you organizing the event this year?
I'm part of the organizing committee. Our group is called End the Silence About Violence, and we have a we organize the service every year at the gathering place. This will be our seventh year. And our objective is to remember and honor women, children, and others for their courage and love, those who lost their lives due to domestic and sexual violence.
Okay. And Candace, what's your role in this event?
So I'm new to this. I'm actually a student at Loyalist College in Belleville. I'm a social service worker student.
Okay.
So I'm just here kind of for support and also learning more about what's happening here in Northumberland.
Well, welcome to the team, I guess. And Chief Kai Liu, he is the Chief of Police here for the Colbert Police Service. Now, you have been working with domestic violence throughout your career, too, from what I understand.
I have. Domestic violence is certainly something that every police officer is very familiar with, and the need for police to be taking a leadership role and ending the violence against women.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you guys are on the front lines, though. I mean, when it gets reported, and we're going to talk a little bit later about how much doesn't get reported, because I guess the estimate is only about 10% of these cases really do get reported, right?
That is correct.
How do you respond? So the call comes through. There's something going on. You arrive at a residence. Can you walk us through? I guess there's no typical case, really, is there?
There is no typical case. A domestic violence call is one of our most volatile and unpredictable type of calls that a police officer will respond to in their given shift. What we look at is our primary concern initially is to look at the safety and security of the victim, and the majority of cases, over 80% of the victims are women, and children are involved.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the goal then is to try and, I mean, obviously you want to go there. This is where the social worker hat comes on for a police officer, right? I mean, you've got to kind of go in there and, you know, be a bit of a psychologist to try and defuse the situation if that's even possible. But you've got to extricate either the victims or the perpetrator from the situation. How volatile can that be?
It's very volatile in that we are coming in as outsiders at times. The victim themselves may not want the help because the call may have come in from a neighbor. The victims may not recognize the purpose of the police are there, a fear of the police. And so the officers are looking at first defusing the situation, making sure that the safety of everyone involved is there, and then conducting the investigation once the situation is contained.
Now, the police are the ones who lay charges now, right? It used to be, I guess, that the victim would have to lay the charges, but I guess in Ontario for the last probably 20 years or so anyway, that's the police who actually lay the charges, right?
Right. As a result of provincial legislation, I could tell you back in 1986 when I first began a policing career with the Ottawa Police, it was the common practice was we would ask the victim if they wanted charges laid, and a good percentage of the cases the victims would insist that the police not make an arrest and lay charges. And as a result, we would leave the victim with a bleeding nose, sometimes a black eye, and only to return a few hours later with the victim with more serious injuries. As a result of past practices, the province came in and put in legislation that directs the police to lay charges where evidence exists, and rightly so. There were victims that weren't in a position to ask for help, and now we're in that position where we can.
Well, and I think it takes the responsibility of the charge from the victim as well, because a lot of times what was happening is you'd get the loved one, the boyfriend, whoever the abuser was, saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, it's not going to happen again," and the person would say, "Oh, well, he says he's sorry, he's not going to do it anymore. Can we drop the charges? Can we just do that?" And that was something you would have to deal with as well. But that's not the case any longer. The province says no.
That's right. Where there's evidence exists, domestic violence, as we know it, is about power and control, and the abuser is the one with the power and control. And the last thing a victim will do is stand up for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Which is sadly often the case. Now, you've been dealing with this for a long time. You were telling us an interesting story about when you were working with the UN in a situation in another country and how they dealt with it over there. Obviously, we don't deal with it the same way here. I mean, I believe the story you told me was they would go and they would extricate the abuser from the situation, take him to the local constabulary, beat the crap out of him, and then hopefully he learned his lesson from that. Was that something that was working in that particular country?
I would say no. This is a country that had just come out of a civil war, mm-hmm. and was in a ceasefire, and so their reactions to policing and criminal justice system was very different, and that was one of the reasons why I was invited by CETA and the United Nations to attend this particular country to instill some modern policing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask Judy, now you've been with this group for, you say, 7 years, and what's the most important thing that you've learned in that time?
Well, I think that it takes a community, the whole community, the neighbors, the teachers, friends and family, to help out anyone who finds themselves victimized by someone who is being aggressive, and that it isn't nature. Aggression, especially from boys and men, is not part of the biological imperative of boys. It's not a function of their masculinity. And we tend to minimize that behavior because we sometimes excuse it. We're sympathetic more than we should be to boys' behavior, and we mm-hmm. rationalize it. And boys are sometimes taught to blame circumstances for their aggression. What did the girl do? And girls are taught to contemplate how they might have been provoked, how they might have provoked the behavior. And I think boys learn that they can act out their aggressive urges, and women and young girls learn to endure those experiences. So we have to start very young, and we have to be much more proactive when we mm-hmm. see people who are abused. It can be physical, it can be emotional, it can be spiritual, and it can be financial. It's sometimes very difficult to leave an abuser if you have been made to feel that you are responsible for the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have children, sometimes the whole financial circumstance of leaving is something that is very difficult to do.
Well, a lot of people mistakenly believe that anger is an emotion. And what we know, those of us that have been able to educate ourselves, we realize that anger is a response to an emotion. It's a response to frustration, perhaps. It's a response to maybe your feelings got hurt. Who knows? But I think part of the problem, too, in these situations is when you're encountering a situation, you don't have the opportunity to step back from it and go, okay, well, before I enter into the fray, I need to understand, you know, what were the causes here. And you know, oftentimes you don't know, because it could be the guy snapped or the victimizer snapped. But this idea that we make the victims the ones responsible, that we blame the victims, that is something that is really taking a long time for people to wrap their heads around, that, you know, it's not the victim's fault here.
Absolutely. We have to remember that an abuser, especially in a domestic violence, it's not as a result of anger, and that as a response to an emotion, because the victim hasn't done anything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the victim is left to believe and blames herself that she had done something to initiate or to cause the abuse that occurs. And in this case, in domestic violence cases, the victim rarely causes, well, I would say never causes an abuser to get angry.
Well, what about those people that like to push your buttons, though? You know, you're in a situation, I mean, that happens in work, that happens in all kinds of aspects of life, but in a domestic situation where two people are living together as close as people do, a lot of times if they're in lower income bracket, for instance, they're struggling economically, you know, the one person can push the other person's buttons, the next thing you know, the guy's flying off the handle or she's flying off the handle. Is that something that, I mean, that's, again, I guess that's sort of blaming the victim at the same time, isn't it, when we think about things like that?
I think we have to remember that this is not an economic, like, this domestic violence covers all
mm-hmm.
Spectrums of socioeconomic populations. So.
Okay. So it's not about whether or not you're too poor or it really is about control.
Power,
I guess the real issue here is that we need to talk about that control aspect.
Right.
And how is that dealt with then in society? I mean, you know, we as you said, Judy, you know, little boys, they get a little old, boys will be boys. Remember, you know, people have been saying that for generations. But this is, you know, this is an unacceptable response. And when do we, when is it okay to tell somebody, hey, that's unacceptable.
There's an element of gender that in terms of how women are perceived in society, and we tend to denigrate the female gender in our society. Boys will sometimes call another boy a sissy, as if being female-like is a negative attribute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it starts from there, because it becomes a power relationship between men and women. And so, again, starting very early in life, it's not biological, it's nurture, that we have to start valuing girls as much as we value boys. And we have to recognize that domestic violence crosses all ethnicities, all religions, all economic categories. I'm sure everyone has experienced someone in their life who has had abuse. I remember as a teenager hearing of the sister of an aunt who was mentally challenged as a result of a heavy beating.
Mm-hmm.
And from my age group, when I was a young woman, sexual violence and aggression was pretty strong. Unfortunately, it's still pervasive today. And we may think we've come a long way, but still 66% of women under the age of 24 have experienced aggression in their relationship, in their personal relationship. And so it's very, well, I'm sorry, 66% of women who report aggression are under the age of 24. So it's still a problem in 2000 to, and again, it's also a problem I've seen university professors, a fellow who lived downstairs from us, beat his girlfriend till she was screaming and we called the police. I've experienced it in my younger years in university, and Candace has as well. So it's not uncommon for women, even in today's age when we talk about how much further we've come with feminism, to still feel the effects of physical and emotional abuse.
Well, on that note, we're going to take our first break of the hour, folks. We will be right back with more of this conversation. We're going to talk a little more about the sexuality aspect of it. I mean, the women that were killed at Les Polytechniques in Montreal were killed simply because they were women who were studying engineering, and the assailant at the time felt as though it was because of these women that he wasn't able to get into the program. So there's so many confusing aspects here, but we're going to get into that right after this break, and please stick around. And welcome back to the Drive Time, everybody. My guests in the studio are Candace Wilkins. She is a student at Loyalist College. She's studying sociology. Social services. Chief Kai Liu from the Coburg Police Service, and Judy Smith-Torrey, who is here as part of the group to end the silence against violence. So again, welcome back to the show. Folks, we've got some really startling statistics for you here. Half of all women in this country have experienced at least one incident of physical or sexual violence by the age of 16. 67% of all Canadians say that they personally know at least one woman who has been sexually or physically assaulted. And I think that number may be a little higher. On average, every 6 days, a woman in this country is killed by her intimate partner. And in 2011, from the 89 police reported spousal homicides, 76 of those victims were women. So again, the overwhelming majority of domestic violence cases are resulting against a male versus a female in that situation. Just before we went to the break, though, we talked about, you know, the memorial is to remember these 14 women who were slain simply because they were women. Okay, and I mean, when I remember this, I remember this very vividly as a young man when this occurred, and thinking to myself, this is heinous. I mean, I remember going down to Nathan Phillips Square in Toronto; they had a candlelight service there. But I mean, I was raised by a man who said that this was completely and utterly unacceptable. Maybe because he was raised by his grandparents and he had mostly aunts who were his sisters, so I guess he probably wasn't exposed, perhaps, as some other people were. But we were raised that, you know, when domestic violence rears its ugly head, that you have to get involved. You have to get involved, because if you don't, gentlemen, and this is for the guys out there that are listening that say, "Oh, I don't want to get into a fight." Well, if you don't get involved, you might be going to a funeral, and that's worse than, you know, the possibility that you might be embarrassed if you called the police. I think you'd be a lot more embarrassed, perhaps you should be, if you aren't, if the person you didn't bother to help ends up succumbing to the violence of their assailant. So again, get involved, get active, and if you see a case or you hear a case, if you're next door neighbors or down the street, wherever. You know, you could be walking down the street and it can occur. The violence is everywhere. All right. It is on the decline, though, is it not, Chief?
Again, looking at the numbers, crime across Canada, all crimes are declining. However, it's important that as we talk about statistics and talk about percentages, that at the end of the day, the reality is we need to put a face to the individual victims of domestic violence. When a victim is assaulted, it is someone's mother, could be someone's sister, could be someone's neighbor, and we need to step away for a second from the numbers and look at the individual victims and put a face to it, because they are people that are hurting, and we as a society have a responsibility to these victims and to be involved. It's interesting that you mentioned that. If we don't get involved, it could be a homicide. And part of the training that that we receive in policing, and we train, we say to our officers is that when an officer responds to a domestic violence call, what he's actually doing is essentially responding or putting himself in a position of preventing a possible homicide, right? Mm-hmm. In that that because the ultimate and bad result of a domestic violence is domestic homicides, and, mm-hmm. and we have a real responsibility to make sure that the victims that we encounter are safe.
Absolutely, and that's a really good point because realistically, I mean, you could go there, stop the situation, arrest the guy. He does his thing. They go to court. All of that happens. Maybe he gets a plea deal. Who knows? Maybe he has to go through anger management for 6 months, and then he, you know, gets a suspended sentence or whatever. But the next thing you know, he's back at that residence with that victim. And if he hasn't learned anything, if he's learned one thing, he's learned that, you know, he probably doesn't want to get involved with the police again. So that may, in fact, ramp up his desire to go for the final solution in a situation like that. And that is the greater tragedy, right?
Well, we know that victims of domestic violence are at their highest risk when they are in the process of leaving a relationship. Here in Northumberland, we are very privileged in that we have a number of other policing partners and community partners that work together with the Colbert Police Service. So we don't respond to domestic violence on our own. Sure, as a first responder, we may, mm-hmm. but we work together with many of the other community groups that are at Cornerstone, as an example. This particular group that is raising the awareness of violence against women. And so it's working together with all our community partners to find solutions and taking the – essentially ending the violence, ending that cycle, mm-hmm. and ending the silence.
Well, part of the new curriculum for sex ed in the province of Ontario, a lot of people aren't happy with it, but one of the best parts about this new curriculum is that it is teaching children at a very early age to say no and to realize what's unacceptable. And now a lot of that has to do with sexuality, but it also has to do with encroaching on personal spaces and underlining respect for yourself and trying to ensure that other people have the same respect, not only for themselves, but also for you and your personal space. And that's a huge aspect that the provincial government has decided to get into. Do you think that's a result, perhaps, of what we've seen in terms of domestic violence and how we can maybe get to a resolution?
Well, I think it is, because if we don't start very early on, and hopefully the children will bring some of these messages back home to their parents and, mm-hmm. and relatives, it could evolve into a much safer and secure system. There's a lot of emotional training that goes on in terms of growing up in society, and you can't really depend on people in the household to do all that work. It's something that the schools have to take on to assure the safety of the next generation.
How much of this is about learning about personal responsibility, though? Because I think the bigger part here, in order to end this cycle, if you will, of abuse, is the person who is the abuser has to be able to self-actualize. I mean, they have to be able to be aware. Because, you know, you can take a guy out of a situation. He's like, oh, well, it's her fault. You know, she made me angry. You know, she jumped in front of the TV. Whatever. You know, whatever the stupid reason is. So he's not willing to accept responsibility for the result. He's saying he was provoked. But what we've got to do is I guess, train people, as you say, Judy, at a very young age. And again, I go back to the information I received from my father that, you know, you've got to be responsible for yourself. Is that something we're seeing less of in this society? Because I think as I've watched the last decade or so go along, especially as youth get older, my son's 25 now, there's a huge population out there of people that just have no idea how to accept personal responsibility for their behaviors and for the results of those behaviors. How do we get around that issue?
I think when Judy was talking about the programs that are happening in schools at an early age, I think anything we can do that helps at a young age to foster healthy relationships and this idea of prevention, like anything we can do starting now, like any kind of programming or supports that will help with prevention, I think mm-hmm. is a really good place to focus.
Well, in order to avoid situations like we saw with the women in Montreal, we also have to teach the children, both sexes, that we can all be who we want to be. We need to be the best that we can be. And if that means that you get to grow up and become an engineer, then that's what happens. It's, you know, skills aren't gender specific. And I think maybe that is part of the problem. That's definitely what led Mark Lapine down the road he went down. The fact that he couldn't get into the program because there were so many women. And of course, the women were only there because they had to fill those slots with certain numbers of women. So again, there was this idea that it wasn't his fault. Right, and that's where the personal liability and personal responsibility aspect kind of flies out the window from where I can sit.
Yeah, there and in modern culture, in hip hop culture and punk culture, you have to look at what people are being exposed to and whether all of that is whether you can parse through that information and understand some of it isn't really what you want to operationalize in your life. Mm-hmm. And so with each new cultural change that each generation goes forward, we do need to examine how that's going to influence the way we behave, men and women.
Is the sexualizing of our culture, though, and I mean, back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know, sex sells, right? So it was always scantily clad women selling you something from golf balls to tea bags. I mean, whatever. It was always, but now we're seeing the sexualization of men at the same time, right? We're now starting to see that. So men are starting to be gender objectified. How do you teach young people then who have access to a cell phone generally by the age of 9 years old, who can, you know, be exposed to the sexuality that is everywhere? It's so provocative and so pervasive in our society. This is something that doesn't back up the idea that no means no. It doesn't back up the idea that, you know, sex is between two people who care about each other. What it really does is reinforce the idea that we're all sexual beings and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And what do you mean you said no? I mean, that's sort of, I think a lot of the problem in our society in that sense can be driven by what we see in terms of advertising. Is advertising playing a role in this, you think, Chief?
I think that's the easy way of copping out. There is a responsibility in all of us. When we talk about it takes a village to raise a child,
mm-hmm.
What we're doing here, the discussion we're having on this radio station, the fact that the radio station has reached out and wanted to have this conversation is us being part of this village. The discussion has to begin at home. We all have a responsibility to be involved and to end that silence, to really look at excuses or reasons why something is happening. I think that's simply a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be involved, and what that means is being visible and being out there. This Sunday, we will be having a memorial service for the 14 women that were died, that were murdered 26 years ago now. It's to come out and visibly demonstrate to the community that this isn't right. But it shouldn't happen just one day of the week or mm-hmm. one day of the year. It should happen 365 days. And that when we see something that isn't right, we have a responsibility to speak out.
Well, we've got a number of programs that we run in this community ourselves. I mean, we've been doing this, as you say, for 7 years since the memorial was, but we even had candlelight walks before this. Okay, we now have the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes program that encourages men to get involved and become aware of domestic violence and the far-reaching impacts. Because again, it doesn't just affect the children that day. This is something that's going to affect a child, especially through the developmental years between the early years up till about 9 years old. If they're exposed to this in that time frame, it's going to become something that they will assume is normal, and we've got to get that whole thing out. And of course, we can only do that by talking to kids about it. But what about kids who don't realize they're victims? What about kids who are growing up in these environments where, you know, I mean, we've seen the commercials on TV now. We're seeing more and more advertising, more public service announcements about how kids take more than just their breakfast to school in the morning. You know, see the couple fighting and, you know, oh, great, I can't go away this weekend. It's all you. And the kid takes that with them. How do we get to those children?
Right. And so we know that from children who witness domestic violence, they themselves are affected directly by that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have organizations such as Cornerstone who now have workers that will go into the schools and provide educational programs at different ages within the schools. And I think those are very effective. We need to do more of those type of educational process within mm-hmm. our schools.
I would also say if you're a relative of a child and you suspect that they're being exposed to a difficult situation mm-hmm. at home, you have to provide them with a safe place to share their experiences and talk. If you're an aunt, an uncle, a cousin, mm-hmm. You need to be able to offer them that opportunity to confide in someone, and you also need to know who to contact that might be able to help that family, might be able to help that child. And so again, it comes back to being a community, and that we're all responsible for the violence and abuse that goes on towards women and children. It's not something we can look away from anymore.
No, absolutely not. We're going to take our last break of the hour, but we will be right back. My guests in the studio are Chief of Police for the Cobourg Police Service, Kai Liu. Thanks for being here, by the way, folks. Candace Wilkins, who is a student of social work at Loyalist College, and Judy Smith-Torrey. The event is taking place this weekend. We'll have more on that in just a few moments, but we are going to take this break, and we will be right back. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to the Drive Time, everybody. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio are Candace Wilkins. She is a student of social work at Loyalist College. The Chief of Police for the Cobourg Police Service, Kai Liu. Thank you very much for being here, Chief. And, of course, Judy Smith-Torrey. And we are here talking about the memorial. Now, I should get to the memorial so the folks know. It is Sunday, December 6th at 1 p.m. All are welcome. Please come. It's the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. The Gathering Place, that's the location. It's in Victoria Park. It's across from the Lion Lioness Pavilion. So it's on the east side of Church Street at the Paul Corelli Way. As I said, all are welcome. And the sponsors are End the Silence About Violence Committee and the Cobourg Police Service. So there's going to be some guest speakers there as well. But please, all are welcome. And we would really encourage all people to come down to, you know, to remember the victims of this instance. But maybe you've got someone in your own family that you want to honor with a memory and maybe light a candle for. That's something you may want to do. Now, during the conversation, as I said, we've talked a lot about violence, but we haven't really touched on the sexuality or the sex aspect of it. And as you were pointing out, Candace, it's not about sexuality. It's about control. But for small children, because a lot of times when a girl is sexually abused, we know that the stats is half of all women in Canada have experienced one incident of physical or sexual violence since the age of 16, but there are a number, I don't know what the numbers are for children, but huge numbers of children that are inappropriately touched, if you will, or full-on sexually assaulted. What do we do? How do we help these kids? Are there programs in schools right now? I mean, if you're a young girl who's going to school every day and, you know, someone in your family is doing this to you, a grandfather, an uncle, or maybe even your own brother, these are people that you're supposed to be able to trust. So how do you reach beyond the family circle to find someone else to trust to even talk about this?
Chief Kai has something, I think, to add on this point.
So Dave, during the break, we were talking about the conflict that especially young children would have in going to someone they trust, because in many cases, the perpetrator is someone they trust. It's a family member, someone they've known. Mm-hmm. Within the Cobourg Police Service, as a result of a community survey, we learned that our community has asked for more community engagement between police and the youth. And so the Police Services Board put in their business plan this objective of increasing that interaction between the police and the youth. And one of the things that we've done to start building relationships with the children in our community is by having officers attend the breakfast clubs. So at any given morning, you will find a Cobourg police officer serving pancakes, pouring orange juice to the children that attend our elementary schools here. And we're hoping that this will initiate and build that early relationship with a youth before the need arises. And so that when something bad happens to that particular youth, that the officer will be seen as a friend, and that the relationship had started well before an innocent or an incident has caused the conversation to happen.
Are teachers trained, though, to spot? I mean, there must be certain traits that children exhibit if they're victims of this type of physical violence. Is there training for teachers? Are they trained to spot or maybe to look for certain key aspects of personality to say, oh, I think we may have a problem with this child or this child might be a victim? Is there anything at this point right now?
I'm not in a position to answer for what training police, teachers receive. I can say that within the police service, we have investigators that are trained to conduct very specialized children interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in a position to answer your question.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that would be something. If there is a teacher out there who's listening, and we're going to run out of time for this hour, but if you want to give us a call at 905-372-2321, and maybe you've got some points that you'd like to raise on this particular issue. I guess we really would like to wrap the show up this afternoon, though. We are going to talk about the memorial that is taking place this weekend. There's been some pretty big turnouts, though. I mean, last year was pretty large turnout. I know a few years ago, I believe on the 5th anniversary, there was a huge number of people that turned out as well. So the numbers aren't very – it's not like Remembrance Day, you know, where you're seeing hundreds of people show up to remember. And yet it's – in my mind, it's just as important.
Mm-hmm. It's called the Gathering Place, and the sculpture was built by – well, donated and created by Francis Gage. Mm-hmm. And I'll let Candace talk a bit about that. But first I want to mention that it's a place for reflection. And there are stones that represent different victims of violence, human beings that we know have suffered a very bad ending. And those stones are placed around the sculpture. And during this service, we read out the names of these women and children. The service is not very long because of the time of year. It's only approximately half an hour or so. We do warm up afterwards, and there is some time to talk and meet with others in a warmer environment next door. But I'd let Candace talk a bit about the Gathering Place, although I should mention just briefly that we are expanding the sculpture to put seating around it so mm-hmm. that it'll be an easier place for people to come and reflect.
So I was interested in learning a little bit more about the artist, Francis Gage, who created this sculpture that's at the Gathering Place.
Mm-hmm.
So just some interesting points about her. She was born in Windsor, Ontario. She was part of the Secret Service in the war and was a code breaker. She had a pretty solitary life, I guess, but she studied at a couple different art universities, and her work is displayed all over the world. Another interesting thing is she had a studio in Toronto that used to be one of the Group of Seven's art studios.
Okay.
So that was kind of interesting. Tom Thompson's. From 1957 to 1959, she worked in Tom Thompson's Toronto studio.
She lives here in Coburg.
Now, yeah.
She's currently on James Street in a nursing home. And she's a wonderful example of what a woman can do in her life. She's been very creative, very independent, and a mentor to a number of other artists as well.
And there was a book written about her titled Unlikely Paradise, written by Alan D. Butcher.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's and that's Frances Gage we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So again, she's now a local resident here, and any idea how she got involved with this organization?
Well, she was asked for her advice and help with the monument when Dick Habermill and his wife Marta got this project underway about 9 years ago. And she was kind enough to donate her work to the town. It sits on town property.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's just another supportive person who understands the importance of this issue.
Absolutely. Well, my guests have been Chief Kai Liu of the Coburg Police Service, Candace Williams, who is a student of social work at Loyalist College, and Judy Smith-Torrey. This is our invitation to you to attend this event this weekend, and it is this weekend. It takes place every year, folks, on December 6th. This year, Sunday, December 6th at 1 p.m., Remembering Victims of Violence, the National Day of Remembrance and Action Against Violence Against Women. And the event is sponsored by End the Silence About Violence Committee, as well as the Coburg Police Service. I want to thank both of you, all of you, rather, all three of you for being in here today. And hopefully we will have you back again as time permits. But I want to thank you for being here today. It's been a pleasure.
Dave, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
And
here are the Beatles with a song called And I Love Her. Please stick around for the news.
I give her all my love, that's all I do. And if you saw my love, you'd love her too. I love her. She gives me everything and tenderly. The kiss my lover brings, she brings to me, and I love her. A love like ours could never die, as long as I have you near me. Bright are the stars that shine, dark is the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her. Bright are the stars that shine, dark is the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station. Live, local, now.
Today's news is brought to you by Northumberland News. Local news is our focus here on 89.7, truly local radio. Good afternoon, I'm Richard Quotamine. In a national update, Immigration Minister John McCallum says Canada is bringing in at least 35,000 Syrian refugees over the next few years. This is an increase from the prior mentioned 25,000. Police continue to look for a missing teenage boy after he ran away from his home in Quinte West. He was last seen in the Warkworth area traveling with another teen. Robert Cummer is 16, white, 5'11", with a thin build of about 145 pounds, with short brown hair and brown eyes. He may be traveling with another companion. Police are also seeking Jenna Ransom. She is expected to be in the Peterborough area. She's 15, white, 5'3", 122 pounds, with long blonde hair and hazel eyes. She also ran away from her Warkworth home. If you have seen either, please call 905-372-5421 or 1-888-310-1122. Kim Rudd has announced that she will become the Parliamentary Secretary for Minister of the Environment James Gordon Carr. She will represent Mr. Carr when he is not in Parliament. A dispute over a Port Hope compensation fund is headed to court. The LLRW fund was created by the federal government in 2000 to compensate the former Hope Township and the municipality of Clarington for the presence of low-level radioactive waste. Award 2 group contends that principal from the $10 million Hope Township Fund should be used to lower municipal property taxes in the rural district, but that the township has reneged on the deal. The Citizenship Liaison Group of the Port Hope Area Initiative is a forum to share information with the PHAI Management Office about the soil remediation process and help with public engagement. There will be 12 members of this new committee. Applicants may sit as citizen at large or may represent a local organization. Port Hope also received an $8,000 grant from RBC from its Learn to Play funds. The fund will be used for the Try It program at the Jack Berger Sports Complex. Tomorrow, the owners of vaping stores will protest in front of MPP Lou Rinaldi's Coburg office, seeking an exemption to their stores from Bill 45. The bill, passed last spring, prohibits displaying e-cigarettes and allowing clients the opportunity to try the product in the outlet. The store owners claim that they are not a tobacco product in the same vein as a cigarette. Finally, the community of Port Hope reminds you that parking rules for winter are in effect. Please observe local signage and remember that plows may operate overnights, so remove your cars from the streets accordingly or you may face a ticket or a tow. Now to sports. Leafs lost last night to Winnipeg 6-1, but they look to get back on track as they travel out to Minnesota and take on the Wild. Puck drop at 8. Tonight, the Canadiens play host to Washington Capitals, 7:30 puck drop, and the Senators host the defending champion Chicago Blackhawks, also at 7:30. The Toronto Raptors won on the road, were down 17, and roared all the way back to beat a good Atlanta Hawks team, 96-86. And the Cougars square off tonight at the first play, or excuse me, square off tomorrow night at the Trenton Golden Hawks at Duncan Memorial Arena. The game starts at 7:30. In the OHL, the Peterborough Petes play tonight, and the Oshawa Generals play on Saturday. First place Port Hope plays two over the weekend, and the GMHL Meaford plays at Colborne tonight. In the NFL tonight, the suddenly hot Lions will travel to Green Bay to take on the 7-4 Packers, who have been sliding since a 6-0 start. Also, it was announced today that it is a change in the Silver Stick Tournament. It is now the Northumberland Regional Silver Stick Hockey Tournament following the merger of the Coburg Community Hockey League and the Port Hope Minor Hockey Association into the Northumberland Minor Hockey Association. Also just announced today, the World Junior Hockey Championships will be played in Buffalo in 2018. This reminds us that the World Junior A Challenge is just around the corner at the CCC next week. You may find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Northumberland897 or check out our website at www.northumberland897.ca. Your truly local weather forecast is next.
Entering Stonewood Gallery is like visiting old and dear friends, but friends with impeccable taste. Dan and Kim Daigle feature the work of local and Canadian artisans, from custom furniture to antiques, wood turnings, jewellery, fine art, photography and giftware. It's all at Stonewood Gallery, just north of the 401 at 3311 Burnham Street North. Wednesday through Saturday, 10:30 to 5. Come in and be delighted.
Don't make dinner a mission impossible. Jim's Pizza Coburg is here for your family. Using only fresh ingredients, daily made dough, and a true family sauce recipe, Jim's Pizza Coburg has been providing homemade meals from our family to yours for over 40 years. Like us on Facebook and visit Jim's Pizza Coburg at 134 King Street West. For takeout, eat-in, or delivery, call 905-372-6826.